is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to the weekly news magazine, Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Aldow here. Well, I'm dubbing this today a culture of hate, and there's a lot to that culture of hate. We'll start with the indoctrination in academia, the woke ideology, social justice, critical race theory, and the cancel culture. Really, these are the underlying culture of hate, many would suggest, that is driving the dialogue in America. And some would argue really around the world, and it is around the world, really. That combined with Marxist groups like Black Lives Matter and Antifa have created a toxic environment for any soldier of truth to exercise our First Amendment rights. That's about the most succinct way I can put it out there, my fellow Americans. But a lot of this is driving the conversations, it's driving the policies, it's driving the actions, and it's creating a great deal of uncertainty out there with a lot of people. In other words, it's the root cause, if you will, of a lot of the frustration we're having and confrontations probably. You know, we no longer can have that dialogue, it seems, at the water cooler like we did before, because as soon as you do, they'll cancel you out or dox you or do something. And then, you know, what always comes to my mind when we have these conversations is, who are they? We always say they. You know, it's always they. Who are they exactly? It always comes back to that. I always think about who are they? And why are they driving the conversation in America? That really is it. And what happened to our diversity of opinion, diversity of thought, right? Diversity of being a free-thinking people. What happened to all that, you see? Questions we need to answer, surely. So there's a lot of that, especially as we cross the threshold of this one-year anniversary of Floyd was an influence in a lot of this. A lot of this had been built in far before then, but many would argue that was a tipping point that put the country into another mindset. So let's have a conversation today, my friends, about a culture of hate, what's driving all of this, and what we need to do next here. A very unique group of folks on the program today. And right up front here, we will start with Dr. Marty Fox. Dr. Marty Fox is a political analyst, a public speaker, a physician, former talk show host, and always a good voice of clarity and moments of uncertainty. It's good to have him here with me. And so I want to start with this movement that we call that, well, you all heard it out there, defunding the police and what that really is. And, you know, there was an interest in at a congressional hearing, Representative Jim Jordan, not one to back down, had a very interesting dialogue that I think summed it up pretty good. He laid it out in three steps, actually, and talked about some of the problems. And I want you to listen to this clip right up front here, and then we'll dissect this in just a moment here on the other side. This is Representative Jim Jordan.
Think about what the Democrats want to do. Step one, defund the police. Democrats here in Congress and Democrat mayors around the country demonizing, demoralizing our law enforcement officers and actually defunding police to the tune of over $1 billion last year in all our major cities. What's the result of that? Crime is up in every major city. Step two, release violent offenders from our prisons. Last year, Chairman Nadler introduced a bill to pay states and localities to empty their prisons and jails. The bill called for the release of violent offenders from state prisons and local jails. Inmates were only deemed ineligible for release if they did, quote, not pose a risk of serious imminent injury to a reasonably identified person. And now step three, take away guns from law-abiding Americans so they can't defend themselves. And the numerous bills introduced by our Democrat colleagues make clear that they want to disarm law-abiding American citizens by depriving them of their constitutional rights. What we do know is 21 citizens were denied their Second Amendment liberties by a proceeding where they couldn't even attend, because that's what these red flag laws, these extreme protection orders do. The model legislation that the chairman's talking about pays states to set up a system where anyone can go to a court and say, I don't think so-and-so should have a firearm. There's a hearing where so-and-so, the one accused, the one who's going to lose their firearm, they don't even get to show up. It's ex parte hearing. They don't even get to show up. They have to go to court to get their right back, even though there was no proceeding where they could attend in the first place. I hope we understand that the Second Amendment is right next to the first because it's pretty darn important.
Now, you hear Representative Jim Jordan there, and basically that's is about as solid of a minute and a half as you'll find. Think about everything he said in that message there. He laid it out in three steps, basically. It starts with defunding the police, and get a load of that. Over $1 billion last year in some of our major cities was part of that defunding, and they're still pushing to defund more of that. And the result, well, what do you think is going to happen, people, when you take law and order off the streets? Well, crime is skyrocketing. It's a dangerous place to be in many of our cities right now. So you start there in step one, he says. Then he brings it to step two, releasing violent offenders from our prisons. And then you say, well, why the hell would anybody do that? Well, all right. And then step three, take away guns from law-abiding Americans so they can't defend themselves. And he specifically mentions the red flag laws. Now, Dr. Marty Fox, let's jump right into that. I thought that was a profound segment there from Representative Jordan. What is your take on that?
Thank you for having me, Malcolm. I appreciate it very much. We can always count on Jim Jordan, a true patriot, one of a handful of patriots to speak up. You said, who are they? They are the advocates of a Marxist totalitarian government. There is no diversity of thought. There's only uniformity of thought. And one of the key elements is to prevent illegal American citizens from defending themselves. Governments that rule against the will of the people require a monopoly on power. And the founders knew that. That's why we have 2A in the first place. So defunding, these are key elements in their transformation of our American society into a more Marxist communist society. Defund the police, defund the thin blue line, between civilization and chaos and anarchy. They are the thin blue line. Where they're gone, they're coming to your house next, releasing violent offenders, making it more and more difficult for legal American citizens to legally have a firearm. We've seen cases now where people were rightfully defending themselves and prosecuted, like that couple in St. Louis. And the red flag laws, that's a great way for somebody who just wants to prevent you from having a gun. You don't even have real due process. So 2A here, you know, this is a key element in their transformation. They must prevent you from being able to defend yourself. And there's more. I mean, he didn't even touch on illegal criminal aliens, illegals coming across the border. Democrats are defending them. They are brown shirts. You have Antifa in the streets, violent. You can't defend. They don't want you to be able to defend yourself against them. Black Lives Matter, a self-declared Marxist, anti-Semitic group, in bed with the Democrats. They don't want you to be able to defend yourself against them. So one of the people that are they are the Democrat Party.
Thanks for identifying that, but I think we all have a sense of that. And it's more than just that, but the infiltration into that Democrat Party is obviously a Marxist ideology that is transforming our nation. Marty, in the Guardian, there was a headline that caught my attention. 1 year on, how George Floyd's murder has changed the world, okay? And a reference is that, and this is very accurate here, it says here, more statues honoring the Confederacy, the band of Southern states that fought against the U.S. government in the Civil War, have been taken down in the past year than in the previous many years, according to the Southern Poverty Law Center. Since Floyd's death, nearly 170 statues plus street names and other tributes to the Confederacy have been removed or renamed, is what they're saying. And more than 2,100 tributes to the Confederacy remain in public places, and over 700 are monuments. And so that comes back to the erasing of history and the cancel culture. Now, they say in that piece there, Marty, the killing of Floyd by a white officer reflected a common history of violence against Black people that united protesters in a renewed global movement. That Floyd incident was really a mark in time. It really was a tipping point because it created movements and distrust and outrage in countries all around the world. I mean, that spark there just lit a fire all around the world here. Touch on that a moment, what I say there about the result of that Floyd incident, how that was taken out of context and how that is driving a lot of this narrative. It comes back to the core problem, Marty.
Ironically, it's the Democrat Party that's racist. I believe we have groups poised to exploit race who that is their full-time job. And they were just waiting for an incident that happened to be George Floyd. And this has been one of the most effective tools for the left and the Democrat Party. You know, and ironically, it's the Democrat Party that's the party of racism, the party of slavery, Jim Crow. But they have exploited this to advance the division. Critical race theory is all about race. It's all about the intersection of race and everything else. It's as if Martin Luther King never existed. It totally ignores everything we've done in civil rights.
Marty, why are they so better at packaging this argument up? Why? How are they so better, the left, that way?
They are better because who on our side is saying this? Who on our side has said the Democrat Party is the real party of racism? If you need reparations, get it from the Democrat Party. The Democrat Party, the party of the KKK. Who is saying that? And if somebody says it on Twitter, for instance, they're canceled. Okay, but which of our leaders are on our side, I think, are saying anything like this? I don't hear it.
Well, they're not saying it. I mean, you're saying it here, and we certainly are acknowledging the problems at our network, but they're not saying it at all. You're right.
That's right. So part of our problem is our side. And I say our side cautiously because I don't know if our side is my side. Okay, we have a Republican Party that seems to be mostly focused on themselves and their own power. We don't have a lot of statesmen there. Liz Cheney, Exhibit A. So part of the problem was we don't have a real opposition party. The founders did not contemplate the absence of opposition. The whole system was based on separation of powers. They did not envision collusion between the House and the Senate. And what we're calling now the deep state, which we haven't mentioned up till now, but I think we've learned that there is a deep state and they are very much in control of a lot and totally unresponsive to the citizen.
Yeah. Listen, Biden's election now and the controversial fallout from this 2020 presidential election, we've seen now this massive push that has... that has really taken it over. I mean, from Biden, we're talking about, I always hesitate to say Marxist policies because I don't think a lot of people really understand the nature of the word Marxism. But I don't know how else you'd sum it up. But a lot of these actions that are happening from the Biden administration has put this movement on absolute steroids right now. And we're seeing it, Marty, in all walks of life. The agenda they're pushing right now, everything from a Green New Deal to the defunding the police, to the environment, to the infrastructure, to our military, all of this is driving a big wedge in America. And it really is put this thing on a fast track. How concerned are you for that? And how do we what is the theory in waking America up to the dangers of what we're talking about here?
Okay, Biden is the vehicle for this. I believe that this is a plan. You have Obama, Soros, other people we may not have heard of who are running the show here to implement these transformational policies ASAP, as fast as they possibly can, before the next election, and I want to say something about the next election. They are making America first, America last. What they're doing at the border is by design. We've got a flood of illegals who are going to be Democrat voters. The whole idea is to change the demographic and make it impossible for opposition to get elected. Let's not even say Republican. Let's say opposition. Okay. We went from, in this first 100 days, from energy independence to energy dependence, gas prices. You know, Trump was supposed to be the one sucking up to Putin, while Biden here shut down the Keystone pipeline, but gave Putin a waiver for his pipeline to Germany, right? So this is the same old Democrat stuff. Trash our allies, Israel Exhibit A, trash our allies and embolden our enemies like Iran. So they're busy killing jobs. They're busy paying people not to work, killing independence, creating dependency on steroids, dependency on them. That's the agenda. That's how they achieve this totalitarian state down the road. That's how that happens. That's why there's no room for dissent. Part of the key theme here is silencing dissent. And 2A is a big part of that.
Biden was not the typical character we expected to be in that seat. But I guess they could obviously manipulate his thoughts or his agenda specifically. Marty, one of the things I've noticed in previous speeches and what have you, I have to tell you, and I don't know if people have picked up on this, it has surprised me, actually, and I don't know if it surprised you, but how he's even pulling many of these speeches off in the teleprompters and what have you. He's coming across, it seems like he's getting stronger and more convincing. At least this is what I'm suspecting. If you look at the campaign itself up to now, it appears to me they're able to keep him. I mean, if it is a Humpty Dumpty type of figure, they're keeping him put together somewhat to be able to pull this charade off. Is that a fair assessment? And it's a smoke and mirrors game, basically, isn't it?
I don't know if it ever comes out. You know, there's something I'm seeing that I didn't see before the election.
Okay.
Now, before the election, I thought that Biden was great because he would just do whatever he was told. But I'm seeing a little more now. In some polls, you're now seeing Democrats, lifelong Democrats, saying, you know, I voted for Biden because I expected something more moderate. A lot of them are disappointed, are shocked at what's going on. So I think he served a dual purpose. He actually gave off that moderate image that a lot of people expected, you know, traditional Democrat policies, you know, JFK type traditional Democrat policy. Mm-hmm. I think that he is there as long as they advance, he is there. As long as their policies advance, he is there. If they run into a roadblock at some point, the word is that Kamala Harris, was Obama's handpicked president. That's the word on the street.
Right. And you kind of get that sense when you listen to her, you watch some of the speeches, you kind of get that sense that that is the case, there's something more to this Kamala Harris business. The people I think you just pointed out really well within the party who are saying, wow, this guy isn't moderate at all. He's like way over there. Will they start to push back more, do you think, Marty?
I don't know if there's going to be any pushback if we don't fix the election fraud. That's the bottom line. You know, first of all, let's back up. You know, what the average American is seeing is what the media accomplices are showing them. And they're not showing them, the full-blown extreme view. You're not seeing that. They're not showing them that. There are no bones about it. I mean, they are the accomplices. They are there to advance the agenda. So I don't know how much the average person sees about this. And my bottom line is that unless this election fraud is fixed, now they're busy trying to institutionalize the election fraud with HR1. But, you know, people talk about this as if there's going to be a normal election and people are going to reject these policies. And I don't see that. I expect the same kind of election fraud they used to illegally defeat President Trump. And I don't see that stopping anytime soon, unless something is, I don't see anything being done about it.
Yeah, well, obviously, we've come to a point in our country right now where, you know, we are at odds with each other completely on both sides of the aisle. And you bring up a great point with the 2022 election. Let's kind of close our thoughts with that and say this. You talk about H.R. 1 and the push for what they're doing. You know, I guess in a way, Marty, they've come so far with the, I mean, it is unbelievably remarkable, that transformative nature that they have initiated these policies and gone from Make America Great Again, from Donald Trump, who was the threat to the entire system, and how far they've gone from that in a short period of time, in 100 days of this presidency. It's radical what's happening. I mean, in every aspect of your economy, your gas prices, inflation is going to be coming. You're going to have unrest in a lot of areas. I mean, I don't look pleasantly at what's going to take place just ahead here. It's very dangerous, the game that's being played, is my sense. Now, back to that 2022 election, I get the sense, Marty, we're headed for something. Something's going to have to happen here. But my guess, Marty, and this is a great place to really bring this conversation to a spark, I would say to you, you said to me as we came on here today, I'm doing great, Malcolm, but much better than our country. I don't know how that's really doing. So where are we, what's your gut tell you, your sense? You've been a student of history and a student of our political system all your life. What is your sense right now as this thing comes to a crescendo moment in these next couple of moments here of what takes place next with this battle that's going to have to happen? I think it is going to be some sort of a battle. Talk about that, please.
Well, I agree with you. There has to be a battle, otherwise it's over. I think everyone has to do what they can at their level, the school board, the election. You know, every level, and people have to be vocal. They have to understand how to talk about what is happening. And it's very difficult with the cancel culture, which is the whole point of the cancel culture, to shut that down. They know that that is a threat. The whole idea is to shut down dissent and not to be able to persuade people. So the battle takes place on an individual level, at the election level. People have to be very vocal. And we cannot allow these fraudulent elections, the machines, you know, that has to be done at a higher level. And that is being suppressed right now. I see where somebody like Vernon Jones is running for yep. governor of Georgia, and that's part of his platform. But that is long term. So I think the first point in the battle is everybody has to understand the battle.
Yeah. Let me ask you this as a follow-up to that, Marty. Don't you think in a sort of odd sort of way, I mean, isn't it potentially a good thing that they've gone so radical, so quickly, so Marxist, so out there? Isn't that sort of probably good for them? I mean, this kind of doesn't sound right, but isn't it better that they do that right now? Because if this was a frog in the pot sort of thing, this frog is really boiling right now. So have we possibly gotten the attention of a lot of people we might not have gotten attention? You mentioned a lot of Democrats within political life, but I'm talking about even Americans. And might that not be a good thing to wake the country up to this massive takeover that's happening right now? Yeah?
I think it could be a good thing, but I think that the frog has been boiling for a very long time. I think, and you can see why they desperately wanted to get rid of Trump, because this was the plan for the next election. And Trump was the obstruction. Trump delayed this. But no, I think the frog is almost DOA right now. I think we're very far gone. And I'm a little more pessimistic than you are. I think we're at the end game here. If we don't stop this right now, I think it's over.
Wow. Dr. Marty Fox there and his really moment of truth, my fellow Americans, I mean, that is a moment of truth. And he just said a lot there as well. I mean, he said, okay, I'm a little more pessimistic. And that's a reality. I mean, I tend to be more optimistic in what's happening here. But, I don't shelter from the truth either, people. I mean, he's right. We have a battle ahead, which is why I just said to him, potentially it's good that this has all come out so hard and so, because it is a wake-up call, though, really. A lot of us look around right now, and even from Marty's generation, my generation, your generation out there, and we sort of can't believe this is sort of a pinch-me kind of moment. You agree, right? It's like you really can't believe this is happening in real time. It is surreal. I remember back growing up as a young boy in the, you know, the 70s and 80s and thinking about where we're at. And I'm certainly not trying to date myself by any stretch here, but I remember a far more innocent America. Sure, there were things going on, but nothing like today. And so I also am real concerned for the future of our nation. But if we don't get to the core problem, and if we don't have conversation and bring that, make that cool again, to have real debate and dialogue, then we are in a heap of trouble. That is the point of what we do here at America Out Loud, my friends. That is exactly the point here of what our network is all about. We just celebrated our 5-year anniversary on this platform. And I tell you what, we got our sleeves rolled up here, we got our elbows into the fight of people that have just been a magnet. We've been a magnet for just amazing voices and writers and talented people all around the nation and all around the globe, for that matter, that have amassed here at America Out Loud. And that really is the rallying call for what needs to take place here. There's so many profound conversations that are being had back at AmericaOutLoud.com. Get over there and share that information. Get it out there to the people and put your truth on it. Diversity of opinion, diversity of thought is a beautiful American tradition and needs to continue on for sure. So as we're talking today about a culture of hate, I've got an interesting panel coming up next here to talk about more of this critical race theory, the 1619 project that the New York Times was pushing. Again, guilty, you know, if we were in a court of law, one of the first pieces of evidence would be our media, our mainstream media and our social media oligarchs. They would be one of the massive major witnesses in the case as we tried to fight back against this. That's a big piece of this. And we're seeing that in all walks of life. And they're convincing a lot of middle America that it's a different world and a different America. And people, they're better at packaging. And they put it together out there in a way that people can swallow it whole. And therefore, we have a crisis on our hands. So let's talk a little bit more about this movement of what's taking place and so much more that's involved in this conversation of a culture of hate. Thank you again, always, to our dear friend and colleague here, Dr. Marty Fox. We'll take a quick pause here. And also, when we pause here right now, I want you to follow up. You'll hear a message right now about Healthy Cell. And I want to tell you more about this. You'll be hearing more about this on our network. But they have an amazing product, Immune Super Booster, that helps us with all the COVID, the things in the fight for people, your immune system, in other words, with zinc and elderberry and all the things that are so vital to fight COVID. I've been taking this product. It's incredible. And I want you to listen to the message here as we pause. And we'll see you just on the other side here.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Because of COVID-19, the average American worries about their immune health 4 times a day. That's 112 times per year. To minimize the worries, leading nutritional supplement company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost, an immune supplement that contains 15 full doses of science-backed nutrients like vitamin C, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea, all in a one-a-day pill-free gel pack. It tastes great, is convenient on the go, and it's more natural too, without chemical binders, fillers, and coatings. Supporting a strong and resilient immune system can be simple. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Immune Super Boost. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Five incredible years, and we're just getting started. Well, they say time flies when you're having fun. Well, it also flies by when you're on a mission of love. Love of country, that is. Well, our goal is to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. You can listen in on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. AmericaOutLoud.com. It's a fight for the soul of humanity. Welcome back to Viewpoints This Sunday. This is Malcolm Outloud here, and thank you, as always, my fellow Americans, for being with us on the mission here. And we are talking today about a culture of hate. Really not just in America here, but throughout the world, actually, we're seeing it here. And before we do a deep dive into some of these other things we talked about up front in the program, I want to take a stop here, and I want to get you updated and talk about Israel. When we talk about a culture of hate, I want to talk about what's going on out there. As you see, in the last day or so here, there's been a ceasefire. What's interesting about this is that the ceasefire announcement came after President Biden was pressuring Prime Minister Netanyahu to, he said he expected a significant de-escalation of the fighting by day's end. And the way that was put out there caught my attention, obviously. And Netanyahu, as you remember, he came right back. I don't know if you see his comments, but he said he came back with a declaration that said that he was determined to continue the Gaza operation until its objective is achieved. So let's get an update right now. I've asked Shavit Rootman to join me back here. And let me just remind you again that he is from Israel himself. He served in the Israeli Special Forces for over 3 years. I was surprised that Netanyahu gave in so easy after he made this public declaration. Was you surprised, and what was behind that?
Thank you so much for having me, Malcolm. Let me take a step back pretty quick just to explain what ceasefire between the side means. The ceasefire means essentially that Israel does not attack strategic assets in Gaza Strip, and the Gaza Strip does not shoot rockets against Israel. At the same time, it does not mean that small delinquencies occurring by they call it the resistance movement in Hamas and in Gaza Strip, it does not necessarily relate to the ceasefire. And what does that mean? That little acts of shooting fire balloons and explosive by the people from the Gaza Strip to Israel is not something that's contained in the ceasefire. So exactly like you said, it's a very interesting timing for the ceasefire. I don't think that having a ceasefire or coming to terms with a terror group, and history taught us that as well, it doesn't really bring us anywhere, right? And history really repeats itself here, Malcolm.
I don't know. It felt like there was a resolve this time that Israel had had enough of these random rockets coming over and killing Israelis and the horror story that is. And we thought, well, this time maybe the gloves are, you know, off and something will take place here that might draw a bigger conclusion. And you could phrase that up however you want, but that there would be undue pressure to put on to really pull Gaza back, but Hamas out of there. Listen, the Palestinians, they seem to be hell-bent on keeping Hamas in the front of this. They control the Palestinians, don't they?
Yes, they do. That is correct.
And their goal is to get Israel off the map. So how does that ever change with a ceasefire? We're never going to get there until you get Hamas out of there. Isn't that going to be the goal?
Well, Malcolm, we have to understand something very clear here. In order for two sides to come to terms and agreement with each other, one side has to acknowledge that the other one exists, period.
Is that going to happen?
I don't think so.
No.
I mean, I know that Israel and the Jewish people and myself here I definitely recognize, you know, the other side, and I definitely understand the humanitarian reasons of leaving it leave. But I'm telling you straight up, until the other side is not advocating and acknowledging the existence and the right of existence of the Jewish people, it's not going to go anywhere.
Right. And that's what we've seen now. And by the way, Poland, I don't know if you've seen this, Shavit, but the Poland out in Israel shows that a vast majority of Israelis oppose a ceasefire. Sounds to me like Israelis have had enough.
They oppose the ceasefire. Yeah, Yeah, that is correct. I mean, once again, it's going to be, if it continues to be the way it is right now, Malcolm, it's going to get back to the starting point. So we can expect hundreds of millions of dollars pumped into the Gaza Strip in the next few years. They're going to reestablish the infrastructure, the buildings.
Exactly. Yeah.
Hamas is going to do the exact same thing. They're not necessarily going to invest in better water facilities, right? They're going to invest in buying a new ammunition. And in a couple of years from now, we're probably going to have the same exact talk, and we're going to negotiate the exact same things.
Wow. It's profound that it, you know, again, history keeps repeating itself and nothing ever changes. And then we're always talking about the elusive peace in the Middle East, and the core of the problem is always still there. And then you've got people like Democratic Representative Rashida Tlaib chewing out the President Biden on the tarmac there. And you got Bernie Sanders pushing, and you got AOC and all of these radical lunatics that actually are trying to block the sale of military weaponry to Israel. That's another point to this thing. So, you know, there's political implications of all of this, and this plays into the takeover of what's happening, as we talked about in front of the program, our government here. All of that's got to be real concerning, Shavit, to Israelis, and to, I'm sure, to the government there in Israel as well. That's got to be on their minds and their hearts, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And I think that one thing that we must remember here is, you know, put AOC for one day in Gaza Strip, right? I want to see the Gaza Strip Organization for Females' Rights fighting to protect her, right? Those people, they're so detached from what's happening in Israel and in Gaza Strip. They really do not understand that. And my sympathy and empathy in the Israeli government's empathy and sympathy is with the Palestinian people. However, we need to free those people from terror groups so they can really be helped.
Amen. Amen to that. That is perfectly said from Shavit Rootman right there. He puts it right out there with saying, well, no, the people, it's not the people specifically. But, you know, my friends, it's hardly ever the people. Most often it's these these governments, you see that in walk of life almost always. It's always the people at the head that are doing this thing. And when you're dealing with groups like Hamas and Hezbollah, and you're dealing with this sort of a culture, you're going to have these kinds of problems. And so when we talk about a culture of hate, there it is right there. I mean, that ties that up. And that is the latest in Israel. Now, I want to open up the conversation a little bit more here. And I want to pick up what we were talking about in this culture of hate. There was a website, I don't know if you've ever been there, it's called Education Week, and it kind of captures it in this one question: is critical race theory a way of understanding how American racism has shaped public policy, or a divisive discourse that pits people of color against white people? Liberals and conservatives are in sharp disagreement. I'd like to take that on right next year, and I'm going to ask Shavit Rootman to stay with us here, and I want to bring on the program also a new gentleman to our program here. Matt Tito joins us, and Matt, he was a captain in the Marine Corps, served for 8 years there. In 2020, ran for state representative in Florida, District 68, looking at a potential another run, by the way, in 2022. A frequent contributor on Newsmax, and we're delighted to have him join us here on America Out Loud Talk Radio. Matt, I'd like to start right there and ask you what I just pose out there, okay? What is the root of this whole CRT business you're hearing so much about?
Well, thanks for having me on the show. You know, critical race theory isn't something that just started last night. I mean, this has been in the works since the 1970s at Harvard Law School, where they came up with this idea of critical race theory. You know, and the idea is essentially that you are born racist, you have these inherent racist views, these biased opinions and you don't even know that you have them. And so we want to teach you what those are, and we want to teach you how to, you know, better understand your racism and how to make yourself less racist. And it's infiltrated the government. It's infiltrated corporate America. It's infiltrated academia. It's infiltrated the military now, the CIA, and it's everywhere in our society. And I think a lot of this, it kind of got exacerbated with the George Floyd incident over the summer. I think obviously critical race theory was always there. And then the George Floyd incident happened. BLM kind of became more of a popular thing. And so now it's just taken off. And it's infiltrated the school system, which is a big problem. And you have the school systems now teaching our children that they're racist. But, you know, the problem is that they're pitting children against each other. They're pitting American citizens against each other. And that's exactly what they want. They want to divide and conquer. They want to divide this country. And it is possible to not be racist, right? I mean, they just don't understand that. And it's a very divisive teaching, and it needs to be taken out of our school systems, number one. And then corporate America, I mean, companies now are forcing employees to be trained on this stuff, and you don't have a choice. I mean, you can't fight back, you'll get fired. You know, people want to keep their jobs, so they just kind of give in and they do the training. And, you know, it's a real big problem. Yet Governor DeSantis come out yesterday and say critical race theory has no place in our school system. You know, and I expect more governors to come out and say that. Governor Kemp or Georgia.
They are doing that. Yeah, they are doing that.
That's a great thing.
And I want to talk about some of those in just a moment here. So what we're looking at right now is an indoctrination in academia. We're dealing with the woke ideology, social justice. And we talk about the critical race theory right there. The cancel culture, like you say, if you don't accept what they're selling you, they will cancel you out or dox you or try to make an ass out of you in any way they can. And it's not only happening in America, but it's happening around the world. And if you combine all of what I just said to you, combine, my friends, with Marxist groups like, the Black Lives Matter. We talked up front of the program about the Floyd, the year anniversary of George Floyd and all of that. And Antifa. And it's created sort of a toxic environment for really any soldier of truth to exercise their First Amendment rights. Shavi, bring you right into this conversation here. From your perspective in Israel back home here, you are in a very unique place because you're seeing around the world what's happening in Israel, what's happening in Europe, and now here in America at our universities. Speak about what I lay out there with the indoctrination in academia, the woke, social, CRT, cancel culture, the Marxist groups, and back to our First Amendment rights. What's your sense of all this and what's driving this with the culture and the generations here?
It's a very profound issue. I mean, we have it too good in a sense of in Israel, we have existential threats every day. We don't really have this time to worry about things that to come up with those problems, right? And I'm telling you, I don't know if a mandatory service like they do in Israel is something that's going to be beneficial to the American society, but it will definitely teach you right away that if you put everybody at the same starting point, they will not necessarily come up with the same outcome. This is how human nature works, right? Regardless of how you play with this critical race theory, regardless of how you play with the equity, regardless of how you play with putting people in the same place, even if, you know, one color skin or the other had to denounce and give away everything they had, it will not promise the same outcome. So essentially, we are always going to come back to the same starting point and the same problem. You see what I'm saying here, Malcolm?
Right. So what is the answer to all of this? I mean, if we were to say, well, because a lot of this, as I said up front to folks, is driving our policies. And if you do exercise your rights or call something out, you do get canceled. I mean, and when I say that, your mainstream media and your social media oligarchs will immediately cut you off. It's like you can't even speak about that stuff right now. So this stuff is being jammed down your throat as a culture of hate. And it's all being packaged from the far left, the Marxist left, as like, this is a good spoonful of medicine you need to take. And it's absolute BS. How do we push back, Shavit? Listen, here's the bottom line. The universities have been corrupt, and Matt pointed that out perfectly. This thing didn't happen last night. He's damn right it didn't happen last night. This thing has been building for 40 years. So how do we get the generation now? Should be you as a young guy who sees it now from all aspects of life, but
really, you're a smart guy. You've lived life. You've been in the armed forces in Israel. You have a very unique perspective, which I so enjoy. How do you have any sense or feeling how we wake people the hell up I'm talking people you probably even hang with, or maybe you don't hang with them. I don't know, but they're in the schools. How do we wake that generation up? What do we got to do?
This is the question of all questions, Malcolm. We have to teach the younger generation to think for themselves, to really govern themselves, to ask themselves the tough questions. Speaking out loud and fighting back, so to say, is not an evil. This is okay to do. This is a fine thing to do. I was fortunate enough to go to Hillsdale College, an institution in Southern Michigan, where I was never pushed into my throat to think one way or another. You read the truth, you ask the tough questions, and you govern, you think to yourself. We created this society, Malcolm. We created this society where people have access to everything and they think they know things about things they don't know anything about, right? We created this monster. We allow this monster to exist. And I think that through this media, we need to fight back to do what we're doing right now. Speak Amen. About those things.
Amen. Matt, you talked about DeSantis a moment ago. Let me share with listeners and have you talk about this here. Just in recent days here, there was coincidentally placed into this whole conversation we're having, a Florida teacher out of Duval County has been terminated from the classroom instruction for refusing to remove a Black Lives Matter banner from the wall outside her classroom. And this violated Florida Governor Ron DeSantis's ban on CRT in public schools. Now, this teacher was, again, terminated at, get a load of this. She's at a language arts teacher at Robert E. Lee High School. You can't make this stuff up. and the Florida Education Commission, they're also trying to ban those, by the way, the Robert E. Lee High Schools. They want to get rid of those names. As Florida Education Commissioner Richard Corcoran says, he calls it an entire classroom memorialized to Black Lives Matter. So it wasn't just a simple thing. She was over extreme about it, pushing it onto the kids and teaching it. And so she was let go. And here's what the governor's office said. They said this. Governor DeSantis has made clear his position on critical race theory. It is divisive, irrational, and has no place in our classrooms. CRT is rooted in Marxism, an anti-American ideology that has caused untold suffering and death everywhere it has been implemented. More so, it teaches discrimination based on ethnicity and racial background. And the governor has zero tolerance for this BS. Of course, the BS is my word, but the rest of it's the governor's. What do you say, Matt?
Well, thank God Governor DeSantis is my governor. That's all I have to say. Yeah, I mean, he's been all over this from day one in terms of getting it out of the schools. But that's how we change the narrative with CRT, is we got to get it out of the schools. What the Democrats figured out a long, long time ago was that if you can get to these children early enough, you control them forever. And they started brainwashing children at an early age. And then maybe around in their 30s or 40s, they'd snap out of it and be like, oh, wow, this stuff is crazy. You know, I'm going to be a conservative Republican, right? But that is their strategy. Get in the schools, brainwash them, brainwash them, brainwash them. And now we have these teachers who think they're activists. Why don't we get back to actually teaching students, I don't know, math and English and science. And the things that I like to add too, whenever I get in office, hopefully I'll be able to, you know, help implement this kind of stuff. But let's have some like life skills courses in high school, right? Let's teach kids how to use a credit card and buy a home and do their taxes and, you know, things that actually will help them later on in life, instead of worrying about pitting them against each other with this CRT nonsense, where if you're white, you're racist and there's nothing you can do about it. Just accept it. And, you know, the fact that they even say that white people are racist is totally racist, which is amazing. And I was thinking this morning about one thing. You know, how long is it going to be until the great Martin Luther King Jr. is canceled, right? Didn't he say, do not judge people on the color of their skin, but the content of their character, right? And the CRT people do exactly the opposite. They judge you on the color of your skin. And so Martin Luther King Jr., quite frankly, didn't go far enough, according to these people.
Yeah, yeah. You know, funny you mentioned MLK. DeSantis actually referenced him in their response, which I'd made a note of it because I thought it was pretty interesting. He said that DeSantis and Florida policies will adhere to the same principle expressed by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., in that he believes that every child should learn to judge people not by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. And boy, that says plenty to me. I get goosebumps when I hear what I just read to you, Matt. I love that stuff because, you know, when you asked the question moments ago, is it possible that somebody is not racist? You're darn right it's possible. It's more than possible. It's the way it should be. It's beyond shallow that people would look at race as to describe anything. You know, I want to get you guys, I got to get into this in the time we have left here. This is really interesting, what I want to share with you both next. So, very interesting comments from a gentleman, you may or may not recall his name out there, but John Cooper, and he is known for his role as the lead singer in the Christian rock band Skillet. So if you're into rock band or you like Christian music, and I love both, I love Christian music and I love rock. So Skillet, right? And John Cooper, and he's become outspoken about what he sees as a serious threat to Christianity in America. And so he says this, a conclusion of CRT is that, now what I'm going to throw on you here now is from John Cooper. This sounds a little heavy. Follow me real closely to what I tell you here, Matt and Shavit, because it's a little heavy here. He says this, a majority, CRT, he concludes, is a majority of white churches that don't have black leadership are racist. But if they do have black leadership, they may be racist because they're tokenizing blacks. But if they have a black man that they believe is gifted and they want to send him to a Bible college, after that man gets done with Bible college, if he comes back to the white majority church and the white majority church keeps them for their own, then they could be guilty of racism for holding talent in the white community and not sending them out to the black community. But if that black man comes back afterwards and they send him back to the black community, it's proof of racism because they don't want to be under black leadership. Oh my good golly. Wow, I heard that, Matt, and my head spun all the way around. I did a 360 on my head, if that's possible, with my neck. Got a cringe in my neck in the process. What do you say to all that from John Cooper?
Well, yeah, God bless John Cooper. I like Skillet. They're actually a great band. And what I'll say is that, listen, I think the church is really confused right now. I think there's a lot in the church that are confused. They don't know how to handle this race stuff because they're trying to, you know, follow the Bible, follow in the teachings of Jesus Christ, you know, and live a godly life while also having to live in the world, right? And the world is a sinful world with all these crazy CRT stuff and a lot of different race stuff going on right now. And so how they handle that is very delicate. And, you know, so they're have to play, they're trying to play this balancing act, which, you know, how do we deal with the CRT in the church? And a lot of these pastors have no idea, you know, how to handle it. So I totally understand the confusion. You can't win. CRT teaches that no matter what you do, they critically find a way to make sure it's racist. There's nothing that you can do. I just saw an example, right? You're a store owner. Okay. You have a white person, a black person coming to the store. If you help the black person first, well, then you're only helping him because you don't want him walking around the store by himself, fear he may steal something. Yeah. But if you help the white person first, that's because he has white privilege, right? And you don't want to help the blockers. So you can't win. Critical race theory finds racism in everything that you do. And that's what we're facing right now as a country.
Matt, that is really pretty wicked and profound what you say there. And thank you for putting that out there. That is wicked here. That is, but that kind of tells you how silly this argument is, people. It's off the charts. Shavit, last word, please, on, I mentioned John Cooper and there, what he puts out there. I love what Matt just said. Les, your thoughts on this whole CRT and what's behind it?
This is exactly like what Matt said. I think, well, I can go ahead and talk about it all day, right? But it doesn't matter because at the end of the day, whatever I say or whatever I do, I'm racist. And this is what it all boils down to. Now, Malcolm, you see what I'm saying? It doesn't matter what I do, right? I approach the white person first, then this is because I'm racist. I approach the black person first, this is because I'm racist. We got to fight this hard and we got to bring it out of the education system because once again, like you said, this is silly for people who think really critically and really govern their own thoughts.
Yeah.
But once those people are raised without even the capability to govern their own thoughts and to think for themselves, then it might not be that silly anymore, Malcolm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the pushback that has to happen, and it is started now. We talk about Florida Governor DeSantis there, and as I said, he's not the only one. Governor Brian Kemp, he says, he put a tweet out the other day. Today, I wrote a letter to the State Board of Education opposing critical race theory in our schools. This divisive anti-American agenda has no place in Georgia classrooms. We're also seeing that in Utah with Governor Spencer Cox. So you're starting to see a pushback all over the country, and that's what it's going to take, people. That's the whole wake up here. So listen, my fellow Americans, when we talk about a culture of hate, there is one way to fight a culture of hate, and that is with a culture of love and truth. That's the way to fight a culture of hate, with truth and love, both. And we can do both. That's my goal every day, is to practice that and to welcome all people into America Out Loud. That is the goal, bar none. And we should all be, we're just people, and we're God's people, in every sense of the word, whatever it is. And we need to embrace that it's a humankind thing. And of course, today you can't even say mankind, because they'll dox you or call you out for that as well. You know, when you use these grammar programs now, and you'll use anything that says mankind, or like if you call it a China virus, even the programs and the AI they actually say, yo, you can't use that. Don't use China virus, or don't use, I mean, they really do that. I'm not kidding you. If you use them, you know what I'm talking about. Or you can't call it that. You can't say mankind anymore. I mean, that's how silly it's all got with the cancel culture and everything that's happening, my friends. It's beyond ridiculous. Great conversation. What a great program. Big thank you to Matt Tito here and Shavit Rootman, Dr. Marty Fox up front. My fellow Americans, we've got some really special programming this week on America Out Loud Talk Radio. Stay close. My program now during the week, A Voice of a Nation, 5 p.m. You'll hear me throughout the week. And we've got some great programming this week to be conscious of, that I want you to be aware of. Things you'll want to know and get out there across the land. Be sure to visit us back at AmericaOutLoud.com. It's where free speech lives, and we'll do all we can to set the record straight. Thank you for being on the mission here. It's time to get involved and get loud.